This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. We have a really great show, really intriguing. We've got New York Times bestselling author Michael Hinkson coming on. You may know Michael from his best-selling book, Thunder Dog. His latest book's called Live Like a Guide Dog. So we're going to pick his brain a little bit, tell us a little bit about what the book's about, how he learned great things from dogs like we always do. And then obviously we'll talk to him about his writing styles. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining us now is New York Times bestselling author Michael Hinkson. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on the show. Definitely excited about the what I call is sort of the Thunder Dog Part 2, what you've learned from all of this. But the new book, Live Like a Guide Dog. So tell us a little bit about the book and how it came about, and then we'll talk about the lessons learned.
I love to collaborate. And so when we wrote Thunder Dog originally, and actually it kind of got started because a woman called me named Susie Flory, who wanted to do an interview with me. And she was writing a book about various things with dogs. Anyway, I told the story to her and she said, no, I want to help you write a book. And so Thunder Dog was the result. And then when we did Live Like a Guide Dog, which came out last August, Carrie Wyatt Kent, who was a friend of Susie's, collaborated with me on it. And Carrie described it very well. She said, Thunder Dog really is what happened at the World Trade Center for me. And for those who don't know, I worked in the World Trade Center and escaped with my fifth guide dog, Roselle, on September 11th, 2001, which is what Thunder Dog is about. And so Carrie said, Thunder Dog is all about what happened. Live Like a Guide Dog is why what happened to me happened. So I thought that was an interesting way to describe it. And so Live Like a Guide Dog is really a book that I started to write because I knew at the beginning of the pandemic there were going to be a lot of fearful people, and we had a lot of things going on with government and all that was fomenting fear all over the place. So I wanted to write a book to teach people some of the things that I had put into practice on September 11th, and I had realized I had never taught people. So I wanted to do is to teach people how to learn to control fear, because in reality, we fear so many things, most of which over which we have no control, or we just go crazy worrying about things that make no sense to worry about. So I wanted to have an opportunity to teach people how to control fear. And that's what Live Like a Guide Dog, from my perspective, is all about. Because on September 11th, I had known what to do in the case of an emergency because I learned it by consulting with the Port Authority police, the security people, the fire people, and so on. And on September 11th, when everything went down, as it were, for me, a mindset kicked in. And so I was able to focus. Roselle helped with that by giving me something to praise and encourage her to keep doing what she was doing, which was working very well. But the bottom line is that I learned that in reality, we all could do that. And so Live Like a Guide Dog is all about trying to teach people to learn to control fear, and not be afraid of everything that goes on in the world.
Very nice. And I love the concept and I love the approach on it as well, because, you know, I always find, at least in my opinion, there's two, I hate to categorize two types of people, but I will for this purpose. One is the one that lives in constant fear of what will happen or could happen, and usually more fearful when things are going well, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then the other is sort of the one that goes through life oblivious, without a plan, without a strategy, without what if something were to happen, not to worry about it, But what do you do in those situations? And I think that you did a great job in the book, Live Like a Guide Dog, sort of broaching both of those.
Right. The fact of the matter is that over 90% of the things that we worry about are things over which we have absolutely no control. Well, what if this happens? What am I going to do? And we worry about that so much that we become fearful of all of it. And we're really taught from a young age how to be more afraid than how to learn to control fear. But in reality, we can learn to, and I think you put it very well, deal with the what if stuff, all that stuff that comes along, but we don't have to worry about it. We don't have to worry about the things over which we don't have control. We had no control over the World Trade Center happening, the events of September 11th occurring. What we all, each and every one of us have, however, is total control over how we decide to deal with it. And that's the part that we need to deal with. And, you know, we can worry from now until the end of time about what's going to happen the next time there's a terrorist attack. Well, you don't worry about those things. You can be aware, as you pointed out, and you can learn what to do when there's an emergency, and you can put a lot of things into practice. But the most important thing is to learn how to control fear and not let it, as I would put it, blind you or overwhelm you.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. And I love one of the comments that was made in the book about this whole being afraid actually can be a positive thing.
Well, and the reality is there's nothing wrong with fear, if you will. What's the problem isn't fear. The problem is how you deal with it. And you're right. The reality is that we can learn to control fear and use it as a very powerful tool to help us stay focused and do the things that we need to do. And that's what we should use fear to help us do, but not to make us paralyzed, not to make us totally incapable of dealing with making decisions, because all we are is afraid of everything.
Love it. I love it. And as the old saying goes, you know, what you put out there is what you get. So if you put fear out there, you're going to get fear back. So you got to know how to deal with it when it occurs, and then, but don't worry about it. Put out positive energy, positive thoughts, and you're going to get that back in return.
There's a group of people. There's a concept called business continuity. Business continuity and the people who deal with it are those people whose job it is to, if you will, what if something happens in business? In other words, they plan for different emergencies, and they call themselves the what if people. And as they point out, nobody pays any attention to them until there's an emergency. And of course, then they're in serious demand. But they would tell you that what they do is they plan, but they don't fear. And they put things in place. They put procedures in place so that if something happens in a particular business, it will continue to run. But they don't live in fear. They instead live in creativity, and they live to make plans to make sure that things go well. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nice. I like that. I like that. One of the things when I was reading through the book and reading the highlights, I was trying to get a feel for how many of these things, sort of the steps and the guides and the things that you put together in the book, how many of those did you, or percentage wise, did you know ahead of time by being prepared and like you said, having all the, talking to the Port Authority, getting everything in place for if something did happen, which it did, compared to what you learned afterwards, after it did happen? Did you feel a higher percentage afterwards that you realized you didn't have as much under the plan as you thought you did? Or did they sort of go hand in hand?
Well, they sort of go hand in hand. I knew most of all the things that I talked about in Live Like a Guide Dog ahead of time. But, you know, you always learn more. And I learned some interesting concepts. For example, this doesn't directly relate to fear, but it sort of does. I began speaking, and I like to record every talk that I give so I can go back and listen to it. And for the longest time, I said, I do that because I'm my own worst critic, and nobody's going to criticize me any heavier or harder than I am. And only over the last year, actually, in thinking about it, as we wrote Live Like a Guide Dog, did I realize that's the wrong thing to say. Because that's just promoting fear. In reality, I learned that no one can teach me anything. They can provide me with information, but I'm the only one who can truly teach me and accept it and move forward. And so I've changed my philosophy. And rather than saying I'm my own worst critic, I say I want to hear all this because I'm my own best teacher. It's a much more positive approach. It's a less fearful approach. And it's also truer.
Yeah, very good. I like it. I like that approach. when putting together the book, did you use mostly a reference back to Thunder Dog and then extend it from there? Or was it a whole new structure for you as putting everything on paper as far as the steps and things to do?
It was really a whole new structure. We didn't really refer back to Thunder Dog a lot for a lot of reasons. It was a completely different book. It was intended to do different things. And so we really worked with the idea that every chapter was named with the name of one of my guide dogs. And the question is, what lessons did I learn from that dog that helped enrich and deal with my life? And starting with Squire and going through all of the guide dogs and Fantasia, my wife's service dog as well, that's exactly what we did. So it really is totally different than Thunder Dog. It totally complements Thunder Dog, however. And so when people say, well, which should I read first? Or which book should I get if I'm only going to get one? And I try to just get people to understand, no, get both. You know, I want to sell them, but
that's
the
right.
Reality, but the reality is they're different. And you can't really do it that way. They're really totally different from each other in so many respects.
Right. And also the lessons learned. That's the nice thing, you know, how you put each chapter, you sort of gave each of the guide dog service dogs a platform. And you put it together saying, okay, here's what I learned from each one of them. And each one was unique and different. They had some things that I'm sure they, characteristics and traits and things that each had, but, and jobs to do. But each one had their own take and brought a different philosophy, I'll say, to you.
Absolutely. They all have different personalities. And so, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And so each one was different.
Love it. Learn from all your dogs one at a time and apply them to life, and you're going to be in pretty good shape, wouldn't you say?
And the reality is, learn from them. The fact is, dogs like humans, you know, unless they're really taught horribly not to. But the reality is, dogs want us to set the rules. Dogs look up to us, and it's our job to set the rules. We don't have to do it by beating up on dogs in any way, shape, or form. That's not a good thing to do. But what is important to be able to do is to have a process to train the dogs. And one of the things I learned when I was living in Northern California, I learned from the Marine Humane Society, is that in reality, when they have people go through a dog training or an animal training course, the creature that gets most of the training is the human, not the dog or the animal, because they're the ones that really need to learn what to do. And the fact of the matter is that working with now 8 guide dogs, I've learned that they really want me to set the rules and they want me to be consistent, and they're much happier when I do that. And there's a whole lot less stress. Guiding is a very stressful thing, and my job is to keep that stress as minimal as possible by doing things like a lot of praising of the dog, a lot of encouraging of the dog, and so on as we're doing what we do. And if we get lost, I have to work not to get stressed out, because getting stressed out is only going to cause the dog to feel stress that they don't need to feel. So it is a synergistic relationship, but I'm the one that has to set the tone. And that's just as true with families and pets. You know, people need to really integrate their dogs more into their lives. If they would, it'd be a whole lot better world.
I heard that. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with New York Times bestselling author Michael Hinkson and talk to Michael a little bit about writing in general. So everybody hang tight. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises as a method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with New York Times bestselling author Michael Hinkson and his latest book, Live Like a Guide Dog. Now, when everybody picks up a copy of the book and the copy of Thunder Dog, got to have both. What do you hope people gain from it? Was there a centralized goal that you had when writing the book? And then afterwards, did it hit that or did it shift? And do you hope there's a main theme that they're getting from it?
A couple, if we combine the two books together, I want people to learn a lot more about blindness and blind people and understand that the reality is that eyesight is not the only game in town, and that sighted people, or as I refer to all y'all, light-dependent people have just as much a disability as blind people do. Your disability is that you don't do well in the dark. If the power goes out, you scramble around looking for a smartphone or a flashlight or a candle or something because you don't function in the dark very well. You could learn to, but you don't. And the fact of the matter is that that is your disability, and you have as much a disability as I do. But the fact also is disability isn't a lack of ability. People say, well, of course it is, because it starts with dis. And my response is, well, if that's the case, then what is discrete? Is it a lack of crete? What is discern? Is it a lack of cern? What is disciple? Is it a lack of eyeful? You know, the bottom line is that dis is not relevant and disability is not relevant. We all have some sort of disability. We all have gifts. And one of the things I want both books to accomplish is to teach people that we all have gifts, and don't think that just because you have a gift that somebody else doesn't have, that makes you better than they are, because they probably have gifts that you don't have. I doubt there are too many people listening to the show who understands anything about, well, not only the laws of physics, but things like confluent hypergeometric equations. You know, there you go. Figure that one out. The bottom line is that we all have things that we can do. And so I want both books together to show people that in reality, blindness isn't the problem. It's our views about blindness and our attitudes about eyesight or lack of it that are the problems. But in addition to that, I wanted Thunder Dog really to go into some detail about me growing up and things that I knew, but also, again, that any of us could at any time suddenly find ourselves in a situation that we didn't expect. Are we prepared to deal with it? And then in Live Like a Guide Dog, I teach us how to become more prepared, how to do things like take time at the end of every day to think about what happened today, what worked, what didn't work. I won't use failure because I think that's a negative, inappropriate term. When you don't do something the way you expect it to go, or it doesn't go the way you expect it to go, it's not a failure. Learning experience. And the question is, are you going to take the time at the end of the day to figure out what didn't work? Why didn't it work? What was I afraid of? What could I have done differently? And even the things that really do go well, why did it go well? What could I have done to even make it better? Then again, go back and analyze how you feel from a fear standpoint, because you got to learn not to be afraid of things and to use fear as a powerful tool to keep you focused and motivated. And so Live Like a Guide Dog's intent is to do that, but also to continue the education about blindness.
Nice. I like it. I like it. Well, writing the book, or writing both books, we'll just say, how are you as a writer? What is your structure? Are you X number, like 2,000 words a day type structure? Or are you a storyboarder? Or are you get up at 5 a.m. every day? Or like me, wait till the deadline hits and do it the day before?
I don't wait till the day before. I do feel urgencies to get things done. But I also don't have a specific structure. So when Carrie Wyatt Kent and I were writing Live Like a Guide Dog, we met every Friday on Zoom for an hour. In between, we would send emails back and forth. We strategized. She would write things. I would write things. We generally came up with a combination of what all we both wrote to make it work. I think I have a good editing sense, so I played editor a lot, but I was as much a writer as Carrie was, and that was the case with Thunder Dog as well. One of the things when it was sent to Thomas Nelson for their editor to review, he said, my big problem with this book is that every chapter has something that happened in the World Trade Center. Then you go back and talk about your life, but you leave me. That is, there's no transition to go from one event to the other and then back again. And that's a problem. And I realized it as soon as he said it. I understood what he was saying. And I said, I will take this weekend, I will create transitions for all the chapters, and then we'll send it back. Well, I did. He loved what we did, what I was able to accomplish. And then when the book was getting ready to be published, there's a magazine for publishers and libraries and so on called Kirkus. And Kirkus, actually, when they reviewed Thunder Dog, said one of the things that they liked the best were the transitions, because no one got lost. And we were guided right through everything in the book. So it was perfect.
I love it. I love it. And guided through it. That makes perfect sense. So yeah, I love that. Well, I'm always curious with writers. I ask that question every episode because there's no right or wrong reason to it. There's no super strategy or secret sauce to writing and putting together a great book. I just think you have to capture the reader and try to get your message out there. And hopefully they enjoyed it.
Well, I spend a lot of time thinking about it. What is somebody going to be interested in? I've got a lot of experience in observing people and been in sales most of my adult life and things like that. So I have good senses in those regards. But I also think that writing it, I spend a lot more time writing it in my head than I do putting anything down on paper or in my keyboard. So I write when it seems like it's the right time to write something. And that's what we do. And it worked out very well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Michael, where can people find out more about you, all the great things you've got going on, and any events or anything happening?
Well, so after September 11th, I started getting phone calls asking me to come and talk to their organizations about lessons to learn from September 11th and other things that I thought people should know about. And we got enough calls that my wife and I decided by the beginning of 2002 that selling life and philosophy was a whole lot more rewarding and satisfying than selling computer hardware and for me managing a computer hardware sales team. So I became a public speaker and I've been doing it ever since. So I'm always looking for speaking opportunities literally around the world. And if people want to learn more about me and all of that, they can go to michaelhingson.com. That's michaelhingson.com. There's a page with a lot of speaking topics, suggestions, but I work with people because I customize every talk that I give, but people can go there. They can contact me through the website, or they can just email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I mentioned earlier, we do a podcast called Unstoppable Mindset, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. And it's worded that way very deliberately because most of the so-called diversity experts never talk about disabilities. And my position is you are inclusive or you're not. There's no middle ground. So it's like Yoda. There's no try, do or do not. Anyway, so inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected is anything that doesn't have anything to do with inclusion or diversity, which is both things. We're always looking for people to come on the podcast. It's a conversation. We talk about things that they want to talk about. So if anybody would love to be a guest, we're always looking for guests. And you can email me again at speaker@michaelhingson.com or go to michaelhingson.com/podcast. But love to meet folks. We're always looking for speaking engagements, and I hope people will find opportunities and bring us in. Like I said, I customize every talk and I work with people to make sure that we deliver the messages that they need us to deliver, which is my goal.
There you go. Great. Well, we'll make sure we get that posted, michaelhingson.com, and you guys can check all that out, see if Michael can come and speak and share his wisdom with you. More importantly, the wisdom of all his guide dogs. That's the most important thing we need.
And when I go somewhere, Alamo comes along. And when we're done speaking, we usually sell books. And what I do, because there's a hard and fast rule, dog in harness, do not touch, interact with, or talk to the dog, because the harness is the signal that the dog is working. Few people have ignored that and they get in trouble for it. But when we're selling books, I always take the harness off, attach Alamo to a table leg, and he's the best book salesperson in the world. And people love to pet him, and he'll take that all day long. So
nice.
It's great.
So it's a win-win.
It is.
All right. Well, everybody keep track of what's going on at michaelhingson.com. Pick up copies of both Thunder Dog and the latest Live Like a Guide Dog and learn the lessons.
We also have a book for youth called Running with Roselle that was published in late 2013. And it's kind of more about me growing up and Roselle growing up and how we met. So it's not nearly as much about the World Trade Center, but it is also available through Amazon. So Running with Roselle is out there as well.
Nice. Nice. All right. Well, everybody pick up copies of those books, Live and Learn, from Michael, as well as all of his wonderful guide dogs, for sure. And catch, hopefully, Michael at your event or an event somewhere close to you. And more importantly, you get to spend some time with Alamo. That's the big win.
Absolutely.
So, well, thank you for coming on the show, Michael. I appreciate it. And we'll look forward to chatting with you again sometime real soon.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Well, we're coming to end the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas for the show, or people you want to hear from most, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows and hosts. It's a great barking cornucopia of fun. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.